Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 6, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
You're an idiot.
I know I'm an idiot.
You know what? You don't even deserve. You can't even spell poker. You know what? If there weren't luck involved, I'd won them all.
You sound quite a bit like somebody else. You have a frog in your throat today, or something?
No, I was not doing an impersonation of what our week looks like during the week when we're not doing the show. That was my Phil Helmuth impression, and I got to thinking about this. You know, the World Series of Poker starts next month. And, you know, we're a magazine, so we always have to look a month ahead at least. And so that's what we're doing here. You know, I got some ideas, and I saw some comedian the other night, and he was doing an impression. I thought, you know, no one ever does an impression of poker players. You know, I mean, I know, like, you know, Daniel Negreanu does some. He does it as Scotty Wynn. He's funny, and Scotty Wynn is pretty funny. But really, when you think of the World Series, you think of Phil Helmuth. You know, he's the quote-unquote star of the WSOP, or at least that's what he thinks. And, you know, he's always parading in late to the main event, and everyone's always trying to guess, you know, what creative, fashionable way is he going to come in. And then, you know, he goes deep, and of course, inevitably, there's this blow-up when he's eliminated or when he's crippled or whatever. And, you know, people are saying, oh, he's so much better now. It's, you know, and that's true. Maybe he is. Maybe he's not. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, he's the brat. He's the poker brat. So, you know what I really want is I would really like for our listeners and fans to call our hotline at 813-448-1120, do your best Phil Helmuth impression, and remember, 1 minute only. I know that some of his rants can go on and on and on, but yours can't. If you go over a minute, we will not use the second minute. We'll cut you right off midstream. We'll put you on the rail. But really, we'll put the best ones on a future show, and then the winner, we'll give you some swag. So not every person calling the hotline is going to get swag, but the winner will for this little segment. I think that might be fun.
Yeah. I think what we'll do is we'll play them on the show, and then maybe even do a survey on the forum and have the listeners actually decide.
Yeah, have them weigh in. So the onus won't be on us.
Yeah. We like to keep as much off of us as possible.
Right. It's just like this great nation of ours that doesn't allow online poker. You know, we'll let them vote and put the winner in the White House. So that's what's going to happen here. And I really, really am looking forward to some of the rants that people might come up with. So, you know, before the World Series, we'll play them, and that'll be our show.
Phil Helmuth. I'll tell you, there's a considerable amount of pressure on Rant, our listener named Rant. I mean, we just destroyed his next 2 months here because if he can't win a rant contest... He's going to have to change his name to, like, Gundam 2 or something, you know?
To what?
To Gundam 2.
Gundam 2. Oh, man. So, anyway, that should be fun. Don't forget, 813-448-1120. Get your fill on.
Get your fill on. Well, speaking of TV stars, we're going to be back in the saddle, buddy.
Yes.
And that's not just a cliche. We're going to be in Oklahoma. At Choctaw Resort, that gorgeous resort out there. It's in Durant, about an hour and a half from Dallas. I think it's the closest casino to the Dallas market, from what I understand.
Okay.
But the good folks there have hired Ante Up and Phala Productions to do the live streaming of the final table of its Chad Brown Challenge on Sunday, April 29th. It's scheduled to begin at noon Central Time and hopefully wrap up within 10 hours or so because, you know, I've got a bedtime. But this is our first time doing live streaming. We've done the television stuff for Jacksonville a couple times and some of the Windy City stuff with Kirk and folks. But looking forward to doing the live streaming for the first time. And, you know, I gotta say, when live streaming first started, I didn't get it. You know, because here's the thing. If you go back and think about the poker boom, right?
Yep.
It was Chris Moneymaker, and it was the whole card cameras. It wasn't just the whole card cameras, though. It was the being able to edit poker and produce it in a nice, tight one-hour package with commercials, right? With a lot of different camera angles and storylines and things like that. That's when people really started watching poker, because otherwise, and I love the game, but we all know, you know, it's what George Carlin would say, like watching golf, you know. And there's not family words I can use to describe that joke, but I'm sure everybody knows. You know, live streaming, we don't have that. We don't have that that slick packaging
right.
too much. So, right. You know, I'm really curious, and obviously I've watched a lot, and I know you have, and I know a lot of our fans have watched a lot. And so I'm looking forward. Obviously, we always want to be the best. And I would love to see get some feedback from our fans on, you know, what they like about live streams, what they don't like, what they think that Annie Up can bring to our first one at Choctaw that's been missing somewhere else. We're planning on doing several more of these, so obviously we want to be the best. So we'll put a post up on the forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum. You can put some thoughts and ideas there. You can always email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. Of course, and then be sure you tune in and watch us. It'll be streamed live on AnnieUpMagazine.com and also on our Facebook page and probably some other places as well. But I don't know, I'm going into this, Chris, thinking that a lot of the pressure is not on the players or the camera operators. It's on us as hosts.
It's 100% on us, man. That's all I've been thinking about for the last 3 days. It's like, oh my God, we got to fill 10 hours? I mean... All right, granted, we can fill a two-hour show once a week when we plot it all out and we have other things providing the content and stuff, but me and you together in a booth for what looks to be at least 10 hours? Wow. Wow, 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 wow. You're going to have to be funny, buddy.
I will do my best. Like I said, I do have a bedtime, so we'll see what the statute of limitations on my humor is. But you know, we're gonna. I think we're gonna bring in some guests. I mean, hopefully Chad Brown will be around. Hopefully he'll be still playing. But if he's not around, we'll sit down with him. And there should be some other pros there. You know, maybe we'll bring over some hotel staff. Maybe a cocktail waitress and just ask her. You know, whether she's ever been stiffed.
So did you say you were hoping that Chad Brown was still playing?
Yes.
I'm hoping he gets knocked out like 2 minutes before we start the live stream. So then he's got to come talk to us, because if he's still playing, he's like, he's the best guy for that audio stuff, man. He's really, obviously, very articulate, great character, a lot of storylines to talk about with him. I want him in the booth with us from minute one for the whole 10 hours. So no offense, you know, he makes money elsewhere. He's always cashing. If he doesn't cash in his own tournament, which, you know, he's going to do because he does every time we do these things, he cashes in all of our...
He's a lock.
He's a lock, yeah. He's somebody that you want in your fantasy poker league or whatever. But, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. It's a different challenge for us, pardon the pun, of the Chad Brown challenge. But, you know, I'm going to take my poker analysis hat off when I'm in there, and I'm just going to, you know, I'm just going to mix it up with you a little bit and just talk about some of the history and some of the styles of what people were wearing. And I'm just going to try to make it entertaining, because, you know, the last thing I need is people – chatting in and saying, oh, this Cassenda's an idiot, man. Yeah, you know, because they're going to say that enough as it is. I don't need to give them more fuel to the fire. So I'm looking forward to it, but yeah, it's going to be a challenge for us, and I want to be good at it. I want because this seems to be really the wave of the future of poker. It's live things, and we want to be good at it, and we want to be, you know, at the forefront. So yeah, please tell us what you like about them, because I know there are other things out there, like Live at the Bike. You know, that's always successful, and a lot of people watch that. So maybe there's some things that they feel that they do that we could do, or that we could do differently than them. And of course, that's just cash games. But I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So remember, go post your thoughts on our forum or email us, and we'll do a bang up job for you.
Now, you know, Lindsay from California called our hotline, and she didn't do a Phil Hellmuth impression, but I think she should have. For what happened to her here. So remember, 813-448-1120. Let's see what she has to say.
I was playing 3-6 hold'em limit in California, and I was in the three seat, and the 10 seat and I were going back and forth, comes down to the river. He ends up betting. I end up calling. He shows the larger straight. I mucked my lower straight. And the girl to my left, who had been kind of chatting with me throughout the hands, said, "Oh, did you have the straight?" to me. And the dealer took my mucked cards and flipped them over. They were so mucked, they were pretty much in the pile already. But I turned to the dealer and I said, "Did you just flip over my cards?" And she said, "Yeah." She asked you if you had a straight, so I flipped them over. And I said, "Wait a minute, you know," the dealer said, "Hey, you know, I can flip them over anytime somebody asks." And I said, "Well, she was asking me as a player at the table." So I was just kind of wondering what the etiquette was on that, you know.
That can't be right, right?
Wow.
You can't do that, can you? Especially when they're already in the muck.
Yeah, no.
And she said they were deep in the muck, too, right? Like, you had to fish them out. It wasn't like they're right there. And you shouldn't have done it anyway, right? I just don't get it.
Well, you know, I'm not trying to defend the dealer here, but, you know, there's house policies from house to house, and, you know, maybe the policy there is if you hear somebody talking, if they don't specifically ask you, the dealer, to see a card, you know, they turn them over. I mean, again, remember, this rule's in place to protect collusion, so, you know, players aren't supposed to abuse it, and obviously this woman wasn't. She was just asking, you know, "Hey, what'd you have?" But, you know, maybe, you know, as a dealer, it's tough. You can't win, I think, as a dealer. And we'll talk more about this in the mailbag section here. But, you know, if you don't do something that your boss is telling you to do, then you get in trouble. If you do something that your boss is telling you to do, but the players don't like you, get in trouble. You can't win.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly in this situation, this seems a little odd. You know, to me, the difference is, you know, someone saying, "Hey, dealer, I'd like to see that hand." And, whereas this was just kind of a casual conversation between two players.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is the question really was, you know, what's the etiquette? You know, and the etiquette there, you know, is bad etiquette if you're asking. I mean, you won the hand. You should be happy. We've talked about this numerous times on the show. And etiquette-wise, yeah, you can ask to see someone's hand because you paid money in that hand just like they did, and you want the information. Yeah, but it's really considered bad form. You know, you won the hand. You know, what the hell? But then the dealer contributing to it, even when it was in the muck, you know, to me as a dealer, I'm going to turn to the guy and be like, "Hey," or a woman or whoever it was, you know, you won the hand, or cards are mucked. You know, I mean, you know, whatever. But it just seemed like they were ganging up on her almost. Everybody wanted to contribute to the fact that she had the straight, but it was the lower straight, and they wanted to see it. And it's just kind of weird.
Well, what's not weird is you get some lovely swag from us, Lindsay. We appreciate you calling the hotline. Remember everybody else to call the hotline at 813-448-1120. And, Lindsay, we're going to send you a T-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up Store at annieupstore.com.
We got a mailbag this week. It comes from Ryan Gibbs in Denver. He says, "I don't play in a casino much as I typically do not have extra income to spend, so I always play in free bar leagues. I was thinking of ways to remedy the situation and talked to the local bar league owner into letting me deal for him. Man, dealing is quite a bit harder than I thought it would be, and I am not even dealing in a casino. Much different when you are responsible for everything that happens at the table. I'm on week 6, still making stupid mistakes, but getting better. Your call the floor segment has much more meaning for me now. I have way more respect for dealers, how easy it is to make mistakes, keep the game going, seeing the winning hand quickly with 5 players at showdown, even just chipping up pots and making change. I am also starting to see the game a little differently and making good reads during hands. I wonder how much this might help my game in the future." You know what else, too, makes it even harder? He's got that thin air up there in Denver. I'm sure he's lightheaded doing all this stuff, isn't he? You know, it's not easy to split a pot 5 ways right when you're high
Absolutely.
On... oxygen. But no, I mean, a lot of the best players in the world were former dealers, and the ones around here, you know, a lot of the, even our dealers on our cruise, they're great players when they sit down. And a lot of the guys are looking to play 20-40 games.
Yeah.
You know, it's because they learned in the box. They learned people's tendencies. They learned, you know, once you get all the basic mechanics down of dealing and keeping track of the pot and all that stuff, after that, now you're just people watching, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it would help his game. I think, you know, once you get good at it, you can start doing reads and stuff and you know, incorporate that in your own actual play. So very good on you to do that. And, you know, I mean, they pay you enough to deal, maybe start sitting down at real casinos and trying your luck out for real money.
Yeah, what I love most about this is just the acknowledgement of how hard it is to actually deal. Because yeah. I think a lot of players really are in that mindset that any monkey could sit down and deal a game of poker. And it's not. It's very, very complicated. It's not just, you know, pitching cards and pushing pots. Yep. It's, you know, there's a lot to keep in track of. And, you know, Ryan listed a bunch of stuff already that he's run into. And, you know, our good friend Lee Childs, who we'll talk a little bit more about later on the show, you know, I think he either tweeted or I think he tweeted at the, one of the last tournaments he was at, just kind of calm down, folks. You know, dealers make mistakes. They're humans, too.
Yeah.
And I love hearing that from a pro because, you know, kind of the knock on pros is that they're very abusive to dealers in every way, from tipping all the way up to criticizing their play. And certainly, you're playing for a living. I mean, you have a right to demand a little bit better service than those of us that just walk in and play recreationally.
Right.
But it's a difficult job. And to be honest, there's a lot of demand for dealers now. You know, all these tournament series and things. And I don't know whether we're turning out enough dealers, quality dealers, to fill all those jobs. So, and a lot of it's because it's a hard job, and then you get brutalized when you're in the box. I mean, no one wants to go to work and get yelled at constantly. But you know, I was thinking too. We do these poker 101 classes, obviously. And I did the Omaha one this last cruise, and sat down, was teaching, and a couple of our dealers sat down to help me. And all of a sudden, now I'm probably paying more attention to the actual dealing part. And it was just a class, right?
Yeah.
Just pitching cards and pushing fake chips left and right. And even that was kind of challenging. And then you had a couple of dealers, you know, I'm trying to read hands, and they're shouting out the winners before I get a chance to, because they're good, you know. It's a very difficult job, I think.
Sure it is. It absolutely is. I mean, think about also adding into it, like, he doesn't have to, our writer here, Ryan, he doesn't have to even add in the rake part of it, because right, he's just dealing for a bar league tournament thing. Imagine having to keep track of how much is in the pot and how much goes to the rake and has to go to the jackpot, and, you know what I mean? It is, and then you're dealing with personalities being rough on you or mean on you or whatever, and it absolutely is a difficult profession, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody that didn't have a thick skin, you know.
Yeah,
it's not easy. And you made a great analogy too. It reminds me of, you know, like when baseball expanded, and they had all these teams, and the level of play went way downhill when it came to pitching. Because you know what, to be a major league pitcher, you got to have some serious talent. You know, it's like almost, you know, Darwin gifted. You know, somebody has to give you that gift to be that good at pitching. Then all of a sudden, boom, there's two more teams. Well, now you're talking about another 40 pitchers got to be able to be on that level of pitching. Same with poker. All of a sudden, boom, there are 31 poker rooms in Florida when there were zero, you know, 12 years ago, whatever it was. So it's like, where are we going to get these dealers from? And, you know, you're going to get dealers that are breaking dealers and stuff, and you're going to train them. But, you know, they're not all gifted dealers. They're not all career dealers. So, you know, you gotta have some compassion for some of these guys, too. So I understand. I mean, you know, there is no forgiving a dealer doing something spiteful or something, like at the table, if they did something, like with this straight thing. Like, if he really wasn't supposed to pull those cards out of the muck and do that, there's no forgiving that. That's not being a quality dealer. That's just being a jerk. But if that was the rule, that he's allowed to do that, then okay, he's getting some heat for it, but he did what he was supposed to do. So... But generally, yeah, it's a tough profession, man. Tough profession. Every dollar they get, they deserve.
Absolutely. All right, well, Ryan, you also deserve something. You deserve a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Ante Up, for sending in this week's mailbag. Everybody else out there can pick up their own decks at Ante Up Store at anteupstore.com. And remember to send your mailbags and other questions to podcast@anteupmagazine.com, and you too might win some great giveaway prize swag stuff, like the woman who wrote in for our call to Florida this week.
Okay, I'll read it. From Sue Zacabe, came in via email. She said she was playing in a 1-2 no limit game when one player put her all in. The dealer took her chips.
You can't do that.
That's right. You got to say all in. The dealer took her chips and counted them out. She wasn't sure of the amount, and then gave her back about $50. She then counted out chips from the other player. She lost the hand, and then the dealer gave all the chips in the pot to the other player. She then dealt the next hand, and in the middle of that hand, the winner of the previous hand said to the dealer, didn't count the chips correctly, and she should have won more. The dealer agreed with him and wanted to take my last chips from me. I protested. The floor came over and agreed with the dealer. I should have walked out at that point, but they kept arguing with me. I finally handed my chips to the floor and said I would never play in that room again. I never touched my chips. The dealer did the counting. I think the dealer and the floor are responsible if a mistake was made. And if a mistake was made, I am not sure of this, the burden should be on the dealer or the floor to compensate the other player, not me, who was right.
Yeah, very good question here. So let's see what Jody says. Jody says, don't be afraid to ask questions when the dealer is handling your chips. Many dealers get in a hurry because they're really good at their jobs and know what they are doing. The problem is they are human and can make mistakes. I always insist the dealer counts out everything in front of me in a very elementary fashion so there's no question in anyone's mind about what is going on. The player who won that pot had plenty of time to contest the chips prior to the beginning of the next hand. Generally speaking, floor people are taught not to make rulings on hands after the next hand has begun. I can understand your decision not to go back to that room, but consider this for a moment. Do situations like yours occur frequently in that room, or are you simply unfortunate to be in a situation there that is uncommon there? In the best of room, calls get made that don't go in our favor when we aren't wrong. I continue to play in rooms that give me a feeling of confidence in their staff, even when something goes wrong that one time.
Okay, that's a good point, but I just wonder if the question has been answered, though. She wants to know if they're right for doing that or not. And I know he says, generally speaking, they don't make rulings on hands. But what do you think? I feel like the correct payout needs to happen. And she lost all of her money, if she did indeed lose all her money. And that's what those cameras in the sky are for, aren't they? Aren't they there so that you can... I mean, what else are they there for besides they're for security? If I'm a player and the dealer made a mistake, the dealer shouldn't pay it, right?
I know what she means. And the problem, I mean, this is just one of those bad situations. I hate to just dismiss it, but it is. You had a situation where something allegedly, the counting might have been off, which we still don't know. I mean, the one player said so and then convinced the dealer that it was wrong. And then the dealer's trying to make it right. The dealer doesn't have any money on the table.
Right.
The poker room doesn't have any money on the table. Right? So the money that goes from one player to the next player has to come from the players. So the problem here is not whether in my opinion, I don't think the dealer or the floor should be compensating for this because the money that makes it right is on the table somewhere.
Right.
So in that sense, if they were incorrect initially, then that money needs to come from the player, which is her. The question here is whether it was disputed in an amount of time that's sufficient to make that happen. Because once, you know, all the chips are in other stacks and stuff, and I think it's really hard to figure out at that point, or it's impossible at that point to prove that it was incorrect. And that's what Jody, I think, gets to, is that once you're onto the next hand, then you're putting the floor in a very difficult spot to come and try to reconstruct a hand that he or she didn't see with 9 players barking in their ear about what they did see. And so really, I think the takeout for me is here is when dealers are counting in chips, you need to be, as a player, watching it, and if you're confused at that time, ask something about it. Be sure you're comfortable with what just happened. Even if you're one of those people that says, whoa, hey, hold on, did you do that right? And then everybody barks at you, yeah, of course you did. So you're right to say that. And then on the other side of it is to remember to contest the pot before the cards start going. Now, I know that's a little difficult sometimes when you're stacking chips and you know, you can't count that quickly and make sure you got it right. But at the same time, you should be watching the cutting of the chips that was going on as well and know what happened before the end of the hand. So,
yeah, I mean, I
hate
agree
to push
with
this
all
on the players, but this was a... to me, the players were in a position. Both players were in a position to make sure this didn't happen, and neither one of them did.
The other thing too that you know, like you said, it's difficult because it's the heat of the moment. I mean, I know there have been a dozen times where you know I'm raking in a $400 pot or something, and I'm pumped because I outplayed this person and won a big pot or you know whatever it is, whatever the reason is, and I'm pulling in the money, and then I'm thinking, wait a minute, did he count my bet that I already had out there? And then you start, and then the mind starts moving, and then you're like, shit, because they're so fast, they got the machines shuffling for them, they're already dealing the cards. So there is a you know, some sort of feeling of, you know, heated moment there that you're not thinking accurately or calmly about how much money they put in, you know, if it's one of those bang-bang things. Now, here they counted them out and everything, so maybe there's a lot more time for this person to look at the chips and whatever. But there is that. And then the other thing is I always go back to my now legendary World Series story when I had $1,500 in chips in front of me, went to dinner, came back, and they were gone. Now, was it my responsibility to make sure those chips were okay? No, because they were in front of my seat like they're supposed to be. Everybody did what they were supposed to do. But the guy raked in my chips on the last hand, and I didn't see it because I was already at dinner. But they went to the eye in the sky. Now, I don't know if that's something that they can easily do, but they should be able to do that in a card room, I think. And they were able to determine how many chips I had, how much I had in front of me. Could they not do that with these casino card room / cash game cameras where they'd say, okay, player 10 and player 3, sit out of this hand. We're going to let them keep playing around because we don't want your stacks affected. And then we're going to double check in the eye in the sky to make sure that the right amount of money you had in front of you is now in their stack or not. Can they not do that? Because then they're not holding up the game because the rest of the people can play. But if these two are contesting it, they certainly don't mind waiting a round or two to find out if they've actually lost 50 more or won 50 more. I just wonder if that should be done.
Waiting around, though, is here's the problem with that situation in this particular situation. The dealer ultimately decided that the other player was right here, and our letter writer lost all of her chips here. So letting her go a couple rounds, letting her play with quote unquote fake chips is a problem, I think.
No, don't let them. As I said, sit out. They sit out.
Oh, sit out.
I see. Those two players, 10 and 3, don't play right now. We're going to go review it. Everyone else keep playing at the table because no reason to hold them up for this mistake. And then when we come back, we'll let you know, yep, you're supposed to get $50 out of that stack back. Or no, it's true. She does get all that money. We're sorry. You know, I mean, we're talking about like 15 seconds, really, that the lady didn't put it together, that she didn't have enough money. Because that's how quickly those friggin' shufflers bring up the cards and...
Yeah. Well, but again, I mean, the point is to pay attention to the actual counting out of the chips.
Right, right.
And that you do have control over, because at that point you can hold up the game and say, hey, I'm uncomfortable with how you just counted the chips. Show me what you just did. That's where the problem is. The problem wasn't after the pot was pushed and then trying to count it real quickly before the next hand. So I know what you're saying too, but I think rooms are... I would be hesitant as a room owner letting people know that anytime there's a dispute, we're going to hold up the game or hold up pieces of the game or parts of the or people in the game and run up to security and have them review something, because security really is not up there to make sure that the pot got pushed to the right place. That's the dealer spot. The security is up there just to protect the overall integrity of the game. So now, one, you're wasting time from people and just taking them away from their job, which is to protect the integrity of the game, to try to figure out a dispute that the dealer should have responded. So I for that reason, but I don't think it's intended for that reason. And certainly in your infamous World Series, I mean, that was a necessary time. But in this spot again, I don't think this was something that rose to the point where taking the surveillance team off of their job at hand to figure it out is a good use of their time.
So then, answer her question for her. Then, what do you think? Do you think that them ruling a hand later that she was supposed to get that money was right?
No, I don't think so.
So you think that our letter writer should have kept that $50 and kept going on?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, I don't want to be a jerk at the table, but I would say, hey, that's not what I saw. The new hands is going on. We can't figure it out. You know, I'm sorry. Next time, pay attention to what's going on. Hmm. I mean, obviously, you're going to get heat for that. But I mean, this is just a mistake. I mean, and really, the dealer should be taking the heat for this. I mean, we just talked about how tough a job this is, so I'm not trying to leap it on the dealers, but, you know, if a doctor cuts off your wrong arm, you know, it's on him. It's not on you, you know?
Right.
And it's the same thing. When a dealer makes a mistake, I mean, it's a tough job. You're going to make mistakes, but when you make a mistake, you take the heat for it. A lot of these call the floors, really, they come down to what I like to call the unfortunate things that shouldn't have happened but did, and then there's no real easy way to fix it. And I think this is one of them. You know, it's we just have to accept that in poker that there's going to be mistakes made, and sometimes we can't be made whole based on the timing or anything like that. So that's why I always try to point out when we talk about this, you know, what you can do as a player to protect yourself in the future. And I know some people don't like that. They're like, you know, hey, I'm paying rake. I shouldn't have to protect myself. The dealer's there to protect it. But I'm just being honest. You know, we're in a position to help ourselves at the table, and we should take every opportunity to help ourselves and not just sit back and hope that the staff takes care of us.
All right. We'll move on.
All right, so we appreciate you sending your call to Florian, and we are going to send you a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells out much more than terrific bracelets for home games or leagues, including hats, t-shirts, and gifts. All of those can be found in the Annie Up Store at annieupstore.com. And remember to send your call to Floor to us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com.
Bob G. writes in from Lancaster, PA. Says he wanted to follow up on our segment from the PokerCast that involved a player asking another player to color down his $2 chips into $1 chips because they were hard to distinguish. I'm colorblind and have a difficult time differentiating green and red chips. This is particularly difficult at one stop in my home game group where the host spreads a tournament with two very similar yet different sets of dice chips. The red and green chips are next to each other in value, $5 reds and $25 greens, so they often appear together in the same bet. Because of the two different sets, this means that those two different chips come in four different shades. This slows down my action very significantly. Someone will call with a dark red and a light red chip, but I'll think that it was a $20 raise. Other times, I'll try to call and not realize that I had my chip stacked incorrectly and there is a green inside my stack of reds. We can't just color down a tournament stack to eliminate the only chip between 5 and 100, so I don't have a huge problem with this game. In the question of the on the PokerCast, though, they're dealing with $1 and $2 chips. What's the big deal with coloring down? If you know that someone is having trouble seeing them correctly, keeping them in play is a borderline angle shoot.
You know, I can't disagree with him on what the big deal is in coloring down. I mean, personally, I don't see any problem in coloring down. But at the same time, you're telling a player how to handle their chips. So I can understand somebody arguing the opposite side. You know, hey, if I want to use $2 chips, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the color blindness is interesting because, you know, we... with my college friends, when we get together every year, we play this card game called Guillotine, and it's not a card game with an actual deck of cards. It's pre-formatted cards. It's from the folks that made Magic, and it's a hugely addictive game. We love playing it, and it's all based on four color of cards. You know, there's green, blue, red, purple, or something, and all your little action cards are based off of colors. So you really have to know the colors. And unfortunately, we have two of our friends in our group who are colorblind. And to them, it looks like, you know, a big, massive, you know, shades.
Right,
as this
right.
guy said, you know, they can't tell. And so the game is, in fact, actually, it's almost so difficult for them to play that they don't play anymore. And I feel bad because, you know, it's not their fault they're colorblind. And, you know, it's tough for us to do, but... I also often think about that in poker, and I'm glad that Bob wrote in about this because, you know, the reds and greens are often the big problem for colorblind folks.
Right.
And now he's talking about different shades and stuff. I feel terrible for him here,
yep.
too.
Yep.
But I don't think there's any problem in... I mean, I know people don't like to mention that they have trouble or stuff, but, you know, this is a home game group. And he's not saying necessarily there's any problem in the home game group, but... But I don't think there's any problem when you sit down saying, hey, folks, you know, I just want to apologize in advance. I am colorblind. It's going to be tough for me to see the different chips. So, you know, bear with me, you know, if you don't mind calling out your action or just give me some leeway because I'm going to be asking you to confirm your action. I would appreciate it. You know, I know as a player I would be cognizant of that and try to help out.
Absolutely. You know, always, you know, dirty stack, that kind of thing. Hey, you know, you do have that red and green together in there, or, you know, so that he's not automatically just grabbing three chips and throwing them in, and it's, whoops, I threw a green and two reds instead of three greens, or three reds, I mean, so, absolutely, always willing to help out at the table, and, you know, and it's not that we didn't think of that angle, it's just that it doesn't occur to you when you're playing,
yeah.
You know, but yeah, he's absolutely right, when it's two and one, if you have some sort of problem like that, or something where it's tough for you to do that, and asking, and that's, you know, I'm just suggesting. It goes back to what we said about it too. Was it all goes in the way you ask?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
if if you do, or you are colorblind, you say, hey, I wanted to let you know that I'm colorblind, and it's going to be very difficult for me to know when you put a raise in or not. If you wouldn't mind coloring down, I'd really appreciate it just because it helps me and it keeps the flow of the game. Now, there you go. There's a nice way of doing it, and I'm sure no one's going to – why would somebody reject that request?
Yeah. Or you can say, if you don't want to color down, please verbalize your action.
Yeah.
I mean, that way you're giving the player a choice. You know, I need some help. You choose how you want to help me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's all on the way. But definitely let people know if you're having problems. I mean, there's nothing to be ashamed of about being colorblind and just letting people know. I mean, like I said, I think most players are very accommodating, but they have to know, you know.
Yep.
All right, we've got some housekeeping coming up. Just a reminder, you know, we're going to honor our good friend John Lanier. April 20th at 2 p.m. at Lucky's Card Room at Tampa Greyhound Track with a memorial charity tournament. It's going to be an $80 event. Proceeds are going to benefit prostate cancer awareness. Chris and I are both going to be playing. We're donating $300 worth of raffle prizes, too, so it's going to be a really good event in honor of a really classy guy. So really hope everybody can that's close by here can join us on April 20th.
And this whole show is dedicated to a meetup, but it doesn't stop there. Scott is going to be in Minneapolis on May 27th, Chicago on May 29th, and both of us will be in Vegas on the week of June 25th. More details will be announced when they're finalized and gets closer, but you can at least log the dates into your calendars for now.
Yeah, and I guess I should say we're also going to obviously be in Oklahoma here at the end of this month for the live stream.
Right.
We don't normally get a lot of mail from folks in Oklahoma, but we do get some mail from folks in Texas. So, I mean, if there's interest in doing something at the end of April at Choctaw, or obviously be there, we'll be happy to do it. So, you know, let us know.
Yep.
And then, of course, you know, it wouldn't be a podcast if we weren't pimping our crews. Two more coming up here. You can get all the details at andyupmagazine.com/cruise, August 27th out of Port Canaveral. And remember, they're doing some giveaways at Suncoast in Las Vegas, and hopefully we'll be announcing some other giveaways here very shortly. And then November 10th out of Baltimore. I actually drove by the port twice on this trip that I took this week.
Wow.
And definitely looking forward to sailing out of Baltimore this time.
Let's see what stories are gathering on the Antiup News Desk this week.
The Fraternal Order of Police, the lobbying organization for hundreds of thousands of U.S. law enforcement employees, has wrote to congressional leaders to say it supports regulated online gaming as a way to protect U.S. consumers and drive out offshore companies in the market today.
Did you say has wrote?
Has wrote, yes. And you knew it was there, too, and you didn't fix it.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I totally read over that. Sorry.
You're angle shooting on the news desk.
This is huge, though. This is huge. That's I mean, now we're talking about people who are out there to protect us saying it's okay to do this and we should be doing this. And I like that. This is huge. That's a lot of people.
Well, I mean, this is kind of the case that a lot of us have been making, is that it's a situation where people are going to be playing online poker or online gaming regardless of whether it's perceived to be legal or not. And that's not necessarily a reason to legalize it, because there's lots of things that people are going to be doing that they shouldn't be doing. But it's a recognition that it is better, it's easier to protect consumers when you have good, solid laws in place than when it's the wild, wild west. And that's what you know, this organization is saying. I mean, certainly if you read the statement from them, they are in no way excited about online gaming. You know, they're not eager to. You're not going to see a fraternalorderpolice.com poker site when this comes out. But it's an acknowledgement on their side that this is for the best, in the best interest of protecting consumers.
And, I've already got their slogan.
I like that. Do you?
Well, it's the FOP, right? So take a flop with FOP.com.
It would be .org, though, because...
Oh, .org. Yeah. That's right.
Other than that, though, I like it.
But this is great. I mean, anything that supports us, and especially that many people getting behind it, it's great. So I'm happy.
Well, you know,
that.
The other thing, too, is that they obviously were in support of the UIGEA, again, because I think their big thing is to get rid of, unlicensed folks. So it's kind of interesting that they're supporting both sides of it. But again, it makes sense. You know,
yeah.
They just want protection for our players.
All right, the Poker Room at Palms Las Vegas will close on May 2nd and reopen on May 5th in the Sportsbook area. and it'll be run by Cantor Gaming, according to Pokerati. Cantor is a huge name in sports books, but this is the first time it will be responsible for a poker room. Very interesting.
Yeah, we'll be keeping our eyes and ears on this one because Cantor's been really making their presence known in Vegas over the last couple of years. I mean, they've been buying up a lot of sports books and doing some interesting things. You know, the wagering on poker and Academy Awards and things like that. And they're a big name in it. And so now taking over a poker room, which, you know, I don't know what their experience is with poker, so I guess we'll find out. But yeah, and it's not a huge room. You know, they're talking 8 tables, I think. So, I mean, it's a good test case for them to see it. And, you know, the first thing I thought about when you mentioned this to me was, you know, I'm sure we joked about this on the show before, too, but when we travel, when we go into a casino for the first time, sometimes it's hard to find the poker room, but it's almost never hard to find the sports book.
That's right.
And we know if you go to the sports book, the poker room's right next to it.
Yep. It's almost always the case.
They really do go hand in hand for some reason.
The other thing, too, is, I mean, these guys are, you know, they're involved with Epic, which we don't know if it's dead in the water or not, but they also have a Heartland Poker Tour event there coming very soon, if not next week or whatever it is. So, you know, Cantor Gaming is also not going to be responsible for those events as well. So, I mean, it's not just an 8-table room. There's some other bigger things going on there. And, yeah, I wonder how they'll handle it. I heard that they all have to reapply for their jobs there, too. So I wonder how that will affect management and dealers and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, and finally, the World Series of Poker has announced satellites for as little as $65 for players to win a seat in the big one, that $1 million buy-in event at this year's World Series. Events start today at the Bicycle Casino near L.A. and run through June 10th at the Horseshoe Tunica and are being held in more than a half dozen states.
I would love to see a $65 satellite that guarantees one seat. No stage one, no group one, no. $65 and you can win $1 million seat today.
Yeah, they would need 15,385 players if they didn't rake it for that to happen.
Oh, that would be awesome.
But, you know, this is great. I mean, I kind of heard some whispers about this over the last couple of weeks that the World Series was contacting rooms around the country asking them if they would put together some satellites. And, you know, it's good because, you know, we're talking about this $1 million, and I know we talked about it on the show. We're like, all right, great. I mean, who can really afford to buy in for $1 million? And obviously we found out some people that can. So trying to satellite in, but $1 million, I mean, that's quite a bit of big money. So.
Yeah, do you satellite in and then do you sit or do you take the money? I mean, I want $1 million already. Why do I want to sit in $1 million tournament? I want $1 million, you know?
That is true. I don't know whether this stuff is transferable. I didn't read about that. So, I mean, that's a good point.
That would be cool.
That's a tough call.
I can't
do
it.
$1 million, I mean, you win the World Series some years and, you finish on the final table. I mean, how many people at the final table will actually make more than a million?
Right.
I mean,
that's pretty wild.
That's a good life-changing money there.
Non-negotiable. Non-negotiable. Yeah. If you win, you have to sit. Wow. You know what I thought was interesting was we played a little April Fool's joke on everybody last week with our O'Malley's move. And for the most part, everybody got it. Nobody really took it seriously, but a couple people did. A couple people wrote in. They were like, oh, my God, I can't wait to get home and deal this out. And we're like, really? We were joking. It was a Chinese poker hand. We were joking. Of course, Gambit, you know, he sets it for us on the forum. And it's a pretty good hand, actually. It's like a ace-king on top and a flush in the middle and a straight in the middle and a full house on the bottom. So Gambit took the time to actually set it for us, but it was a joke, so we got a legitimate O'Malley's move this week.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a 1-2 no-limit hold'em casino cash game. At this table, the action comes in waves. It's pretty timid, with very little raising pre-flop, but if someone gets sucked out on, it can turn hyper-aggressive in an instant. We bought in for 100 and are down to 70. We're the short stack at the table. We're in the cutoff, and the table is nine-handed. Under the gun, the big stack with more than 600 and a victim of a recent suck-out calls. The plus one folds, MP1 folds, MP2 calls, he's an older gentleman who plays fairly straightforward. MP3 folds, and we look down at the King of Clubs, Queen of Diamonds. We're going to see a flop here, but we're also going to formulate a little plan. We're pushing hard if we get two pair or better. Otherwise, we're not going to get too excited if we flop top pair. The button calls, the small blind calls, and the big blind checks. The pot is $12, and the flop comes down King of Hearts, Queen of Spades, 8 of Hearts. The blinds check, the under-the-gun bets $10 into the $12 pot, and the MP calls. It's now to us. Are we sticking to our plan?
All right, Chris, if you can tell, I'm a little bit tired.
Uh-huh.
Not my usual boisterous, joyful self today. Because I've got no sleep the last couple days. As you know, as everybody knows, I turned the big 4-0 last month. And my wonderful, beautiful wife treated me and my family to a Washington, D.C. vacation last week.
Cool.
And I'm like, you know, heck, if I'm going to be all the way up here, why not tack on a few extra days and go visit our friends at all the poker rooms in the Atlantic City, Philadelphia area and see what's new since the last time we visited. And I got to say, plenty is new. I mean, we were there, Atlantic City, it was June, I remember.
Yeah.
Did we do Philadelphia before or after that? I can't remember now, but it's been a while since we did.
Yeah, it was. They were all grouped, though. They were all close.
Yeah. And so I had a good time, and I didn't get much sleep in AC, but I'm trying to get back on my regular schedule of 14 hours a day.
So
now.
So you went to Atlantic City, and you got on a plane on the way home on time, and you landed in the correct airport this time, because it is possible. To plan an Atlantic City trip where we don't miss a flight, one of us actually gets on a plane and gets home and flies into Tampa?
Oh, man, you know, that is not vacated from my brain in the least. And, you know, I was joking with you on the phone. I was complaining on my last meeting was at Delaware Park. And I finished that with, like, 5 hours before my flight was supposed to leave in Baltimore. And I'm like, what am I going to do to fill the time? And I'm like, you know what? I was driving and I hadn't eaten all day. I'm like, I'm going to pull over and have some lunch. I'm like, no! I'm going to go straight to the airport. I'll eat at the airport. Don't want to take any chances that I miss my flight. So. But no, I got home all right, but was up playing cards late, which is very uncharacteristic of me, both nights in AC. So I think I counted I got a total of 6 hours of sleep when I was in Atlantic City.
Jeez.
And I normally get 6 hours a night. So,
you know, how many days were you in Atlantic City? Two?
Two nights, yeah.
That's crazy.
Plus a little extra time on each side, so kind of crazy. But I wanted to obviously we had a great meetup, so I want to talk about that a little bit and visit a bunch of the rooms. There's a lot of new stuff going on, so we'll do a little Mid-Atlantic update here, folks. For folks, first I want to say Tom, the great poker room director at the Trump Taj Mahal, took really good care of me this time, put me up in a spacious suite in the Chairman Tower there.
Wow.
You know, it's all Trump, right? You know, and it was very, very nicely. I get up there and I'm like, I just felt like firing things. Well, I went to look at the lamp and I'm like, you're fired. Go to the table, you're fired. Definitely wanted to fire the vending machine. You know, $2 for a Coke. But no, he took good care of me. I really appreciated that. And definitely very, very nice hotel rooms there at the Trump Taj Mahal. And when I get in, you know, I'm unpacking. And I turned the TV on, and I thought this was funny, too, because I watched TV for a total of 5 minutes the entire time I was there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just turned it on for background noise while I was unpacking and never watched it again. And when I was checking out, I used it to check out, obviously. You did the little online checkout on TV. And as I was checking it out, I was thinking, you know, how many times would a person, if they checked into a hotel room, got upstairs, and there was no TV in the room, you'd go ballistic, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Get on the front desk like, what the heck? I can't even get a TV in my hotel room. And here's the case where I probably would have done that and I wouldn't have watched it the entire time. Yeah. I just think it's funny. Yeah. I say the same thing when I see that what's that big board thing that looks like a surfboard and that little contraption that's got like metal on it? They always have those in hotel rooms and I have no idea why.
Ironing board?
I guess that's what it is, but I never use that stuff. I wish
take it to the pool with you next time you go.
Yeah, I wish they'd just take that out and save me $5 on my room charge. But, You know, this is what I think. You know, Spirit Airlines opens a hotel. That's what's going to happen. You're going to have, like, a bed in the room.
Yeah.
And then if you want to, you call down the front desk. I'd like to have a TV brought up. All right, that'll be $5. But anyhow, so I turned the TV on, right? And whatever channel was on, remember, this is like in the afternoon on a Monday. And so it's nothing but soap operas and talk shows on, right? So I turned it on, it's a soap opera. And I meant to watch it long enough to figure out which one it is. Though, unless it was Young and the Restless, I wouldn't be able to figure it out, because that's the only one my wife ever forced me to watch. But there's a scene where they're playing poker in a very elegant, like, Casino Royale, Monaco kind of poker room, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's heads up. It's a woman all dressed to the nines and a gentleman all dressed to the nines, and apparently a poker room manager just standing there, you know, in a tux. And so I didn't see the build up to it, obviously. I turned it on, and it was the end of the hand, and the gentleman that was playing turned to the poker manager, and he's like, "Ladies first." And the woman slowly turned over her cards for a full house. And I immediately thought of our good friend Bernice Q, who I knew I was going to see later that night at the meetup. Absolutely fantastic friend of Annie Up. And I love her because she just speaks her mind, right?
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to picture her in this scene where the guy said, "Ladies first." That would not have sat well with her, I don't think. But on this show, it did. And so the woman turns over her full house, and this manager, who I guess had nothing else to do, maybe he thought he was at the baccarat pit and had to announce everything, was like, "Queens full of aces. That's a very strong hand." And then, so the gentleman playing is looking at it, and he's like, "Yes, yes, that is a very strong hand. But I have aces full of queens." A stronger hand. And
wait a minute. You lost me. Somebody had queens full, and then he had
eight. How
does that happen?
But he had a small boat and a big boat. Come on. It's Hollywood. Work with me here.
All right. Was it a Hold'em game?
Yeah, it was Hold'em.
Okay. That's possible, I guess. But.
Right. And he totally slow rolled the hell out of this woman.
Oh, man. Awesome. So ladies first, but yet then he totally slow rolls her.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was humorous on so many fronts, but that was my poker introduction to Atlantic City. Watching this made up baccarat scene on some soap opera. But all right, well, let's talk about real fun stuff now. Obviously, so that first night we had the meetup, and always enjoy going to Atlantic City and seeing our friends there. Of course, it was a Monday night, so we knew it was going to be tough for people to get down. Didn't help the fact that I didn't check to make sure the House of Blues was actually open on a Monday night. You know, silly me, I would think that a restaurant would be open more than 5 hours a week, but, you know, what do I know? So we had to do a quick change and tweet to everyone that we were moving it over to Harvey's Oyster House, or Oyster Bar over at Bally's. So I'm sure we lost about 50, 60 fans in that, because we ended up with four for dinner and then go Dar Dar just for cards. So I apologize for all of you that were standing outside the House of Blues wondering why it was closed and where we were, but that's why we have Twitter accounts, right?
Yep.
But no, we had a great meal there, and, you know, we're looking at the beer menu, and this has been a wild trip for me, because I started in Washington, D.C., where, you know, you choose between buying a car or a beer, because prices are outrageous there. Then we went to Philadelphia with my wife, and they pretty much give you beer away in that city, which we loved. And now we're back in Atlantic City, where you have to choose between an airplane and a beer when you're trying to buy. And so, you know, I'm scanning the menu. And it's all like, you know, $5-$6 for a beer. And the bottom, they have a bucket of beer, 5 beers for $10. All right, I'm not very good at math at the poker table, but I'm amazingly good at math at the beer menu.
Okay.
And I'm like, that's $2 a beer. That's a pretty good deal. Yeah. So I turned to the folks. I mean, who wants to have beer when we get a bucket? And then Kevin was with us. He's like, you should ask them to make sure those are regular-sized beers. I would have never thought about that, right?
Yeah.
So our waiter comes back, and I'm like, "All right, so what's the deal on the bucket here, bud, my good friend? Are these regular-sized beers?" And he's like, "I believe they're 7-ounce beers." I'm like, 7-ounce beers? I want a beer. I don't want a shot of beer. Oh, but even after doing the math, it worked out well.
Yeah, because that's still, what, $4 for a 14-ounce beer?
14-ounce, yeah, so you get a couple extra ounces, and it's less than the... Yeah, so, I mean, it's still a good deal.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, so we sat around the Annie Up Nation drinking out of little teacups, teacup-sized beers here, which we thought was kind of funny. But excellent place. Definitely recommend Harvey's Oyster Bar there at Bally's. Very good location right off the boardwalk and everything, so had a lot of fun there. But then we asked folks where we wanted to go play some cards, and you know, I was staying at the Taj, Kevin was staying at the Showboat, Bernie Skew was staying at Resort, so we're all in that same little area. And Revel, the brand new resort, which we'll talk about a little bit, opened that night too, so we kind of wanted to see that. But Kevin's like, you know, hey, I gotta get 4 hours in at the Showboat to get a free buffet. We're like, hey, who doesn't want a free buffet? So we decided to go down and play at the Showboat. And we walked in, and we said, hey, we got four of us. Godard's on his way over. We got five. Can we play horse? And it was like we asked them if they would accept $1 million from us, Chris. The floor eyes light up. He's like, absolutely. Sit right down at that table there. We'll get the game started in a minute. It was amazing.
Awesome.
You know, that's the way it should be, I guess, in rooms. But, you know, again, we know the economics of rooms, too. I mean, they may not want to start a room for four people, particularly a whole group of people that might get up and leave and just break the game. But very, very accommodating at the Showboat. Great room there run by Dan Morelli. You didn't get to meet him when we went up because he had a little softball injury. But
right.
I spent several hours with him the next day. Great guy, really doing some good things at the Showboat. And he's certainly training his staff well. And they took really good care of us. So we sat down and... we were going to play horse, and then, of course, you know, when you mention playing horse, there's always a couple of us that say, well, we don't have to play the Raz. We just play hose. And Big Guru, who, you know, he's really banking to be Andy Up Fan of the Year here. He went on our December cruise all the way in New Orleans. He lives up in D.C., and then he drove all the way from D.C. to the meetup, four hours.
Wow.
And didn't even get a room. He was just going to stay up all night and drive back home and go to work.
Wow.
Hit it. But he was there, and he's like, oh, you know what? I really want to play Raz. And, of course, we outvoted him.
So. Oh, great. The guy drives 4 hours, and you outvote him.
Hey, you know, you got to learn to deal with disappointment sometime in your life.
Yeah, next time I'm dressed in a tux, I'm going to slow roll you on the behalf of Big Guru.
But we decided to play 3-6 hose, and we got the game going, and it turned out to be great. We played it with just the four of us, and then, like I said, Godard showed up in five, and then we just started attracting interlopers. They're walking by, hey, this is great, hose. We'll sit down and play. So cool. We had a full table for several hours. Ended up playing to like 4 a.m.
Jeez.
I was trying to stay up as long as I could because I felt bad for Big Guru. He drove all the way, and you know, I didn't want to say, thanks, I'm going to bed. Sorry, you don't have a bed. Good luck on that drive home. But I made it as long as I could. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, about why I decided to get it. But the very first hand, we were playing Hold'em Right. Ended up heads up against Bernice Q. Got quads!
Oh, my God. First hand?
First hand.
Oh, my God.
Never in my life. but that set the tone. I mean, it's funny, and of course, you know, I love you know, rubbing it in on Bernice because she's so much fun to play with, and getting her upset on the very first hand is a lot of fun. We had a good time. Later on in the stud rotation, I got quads again, Chris. Against one of the interlopers. You know, it's fun to get quads against Bernice just to get her upset, but I prefer to get quads against non-Antiup fans at the Antiup meetup
and yeah.
Take their money. So I got two quads. And so I was tweeting, and I'm like, you know, we're only playing four games. If I can get quads in stud eight, I could hit for the cycle for the night. And it should be easier to get it in Omaha, right?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't get quads in Omaha, but I did get a straight flush later on.
Oh, my God. You got the high hand cycle.
Yeah, so I had two quads, a straight flush, and you know how much swag I won for all that?
Nothing.
A lot of money from the table. No jacks or anything, but I'm not complaining. But I won a lot of money. I ended up banking a profit of 421 Skittles.
Jeez.
In a 3-6 game. I felt like Chris Cosenza. I never win at these things, and you're always stuffing money in all kinds of pockets when you leave.
Wow, 421, though. That's huge for a 3-6 game.
Absolutely. You know, and I was tipping heavily, too. So, I mean, probably the actual profit was probably more. But I'm fine with that. That's a great day at the office for Scott Long.
Basically, the only two winners were you and the Showboat. I mean, really, who else could have won in that game if you took 421 out of it? Oh, my God.
It was a lot of fun. But, you know, towards the end of the night, we... You know, a couple of the fans left. Big Rue and I were still playing. Bernice had moved over to No Limit because there's a player that sat down that was driving her crazy. Totally driving me crazy, too. He was a dealer at another casino, and, you know, again, we just talked about how tough it is being dealers, so I'm going to knock them down a peg here, too. Sometimes they're arrogant as heck, right?
Yeah.
They think they know everything, and so the guy was just driving us all crazy. But he thought he could outplay us all, and I love when I get against somebody that thinks they can outplay me but can't.
Yeah.
Because I'll just play against them all night, and I was taking stacks and stacks off that guy, just driving him crazy. Because we were playing shorthanded at that point, like, I think it was just four-handed. And, you know, so you need to loosen up a little bit, but, you know, he was driving the action with fifth pair in Omaha, high-low.
No way.
And, you know, you do that all night with me, I'm going to clean you out.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was a great game from a profit standpoint. So this is kind of the discussion, you know. The old adage of poker is, if you're in a good game, stay in it. If you're in a bad game, get the heck out of it, right?
Yeah.
And I was in a good game, but it was like 4 a.m. I usually go to bed at 10.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, I had some beers and stuff. I wasn't drunk because I've been drinking slowly. But, you know, I was getting tired. I'm like, it was killing me, but I knew I had to get up and go get some sleep because I had a big day the next day. But it killed me to have to lose a game, or leave a game that I knew I could beat.
Yeah. That sucks.
And beyond that, you know, we got a lot of walk-by traffic, you know, because they never get a hose game going there. I mean, it's all No Limit, you know, occasionally 2-4 limit. So, you know, we were kind of like, you know, the animals in a zoo, you know, people walking by to see us. Hey, what's that? What are they playing? That's crazy. And it was great. What are you guys playing? We're playing a hose rotation, blah, 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 blah. I don't know how to play any of those. Give me some chips. Sit down. You love that, right?
Yeah.
And of course, we had some a couple crazies. And again, I was sitting right next to Bernice, and she just makes me smile the whole time talking about these people. And one guy who was asking us what we were playing, and then started criticizing. Why are you playing those games?
Oh, jeez.
And she was like, you know, I understand somebody asking us what we're playing, but now telling us we shouldn't be playing them. What the heck? Go play what you want to play. This is our table. And then we had another guy who was a regular. I saw him there the rest of the time I was there at different games. But he was intrigued and sat down. And Chris, you know, I feel bad. These people that don't know how to play the game, I honestly do feel bad taking their money at some time. But obviously I know they're grown adults and they're sitting down, and that's what I do. But the guy could never figure out what a low was. And he would be raising with a low with only two low cards on the board on the river. And,
oh, no.
And he turned it over, and he's like, ah, I got the low. No, sir, you don't. There's still not a low. Three cards. I don't understand this. And it totally cleaned him out. So those are the kind of players that were sitting down. But, you know, and it reminded me, there's a difference between not knowing how the game is played and not knowing how the game is playing and being very aggressive at it.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing if you're just calling down to the end and, hey, do I have a low? But this guy was, like, raising and betting out with ace high because he didn't think he thought he had a low. And, of course, smart players like me figured this out and, you know, would let him do their betting for us and raise and get a lot more money in. But he finally got he stopped off in a huff. He said, oh, I don't understand this game. See you later. Oh, okay. You're welcome back anytime, sir.
Well, at that point, you welcome him. You say, wait, come on back, and we'll tell you exactly how to make a low. Because you don't want to lose this guy, even if he does finally understand the game. I go grab him by the collar and say, look, I'll buy you some beer. Just sit here. Stay next to me. That's pretty funny. Wow, a lot of characters. Of course, it is Atlantic City, so that's to be expected.
And then one more thing from the home game. You know, I've been hearing about this. I don't know if you've heard about it, too, but there's this app on, I believe it's for both in the Apple Store and the Android market, called Bravo Poker Live. And what it does is it syncs all the poker rooms that use the Bravo Genesis system, you know, for their game management, which is a lot of rooms these days. It takes all their information and feeds it into this app. So you can just call the app. It uses your GPS where you are, knows exactly where you are, and list all the rooms in order of distance from you, and tells you exactly what games are spreading and who's on and how many people are on the wait list.
Yeah, that was the lead note to our Southern California column last month. Saquon uses it, and it's getting some big reviews out there too. People love it. They can just know when and where a game is going, and I mean they always recommend that you call the room, even if it's set, because sometimes the rooms aren't updating their list or something. But
some of the managers told me, like, you know, sometimes we all lie on it. You know, we all do it, so you know, it's not completely accurate, but by and large, it's pretty good. It's a great little app when you're. I mean, even in Atlantic City, you know, you can walk the boardwalk and you hit three rooms pretty close, and then go a little farther, you can pick up two more, and then it's kind of a haul to get down the Tropicana, and of course, if you want to go to the big rooms, Borgata and Harrah's and then the Nugget, you have to get in your car and go, right? So, you know, the old days, you had to call around. Now you can just look on your phone and figure out whether there's a game going that you want. So the reason it came up, too, is because someone said, you know, hey, somebody should download and check and see whether this hose game is showing up on it. And we did. And we're like, hey, that's pretty cool. And then some of the players, the local players, were like, yeah, I think we're going to draw some people in because there are going to be people, players here that they check it constantly. And there's players that would love to play this hose game. And when they see it on there, one, they're going to wonder if it's a mistake.
Yeah.
But two, if they don't think it's a mistake, they're going to come over and play. And I think it's a real powerful tool, and it's just unfortunate that it's a Bravo-only product, you know, because there's some rooms in Atlantic City. Of course, some rooms, a lot of rooms everywhere, that don't use Bravo, so they aren't going to show up on it. But definitely a sales pitch for getting poker rooms, for getting Bravo, because I think more and more people are going to be using that app. And when you're new to an area, you know, obviously, hopefully you pick up an ante-up in your local room and figure out what's close by, but the app is right there on your phone, so, you know, if you don't have a Bravo system in your room, you're not going to show up on that, and people aren't going to know that you're there, so.
Pretty cool.
Very neat. So the final night, all Tuesday I did, I roamed around talking to managers, and we'll talk about that here in a minute, but then had some drinks with our good friend Lee Childs, which is a blast. And headed back to the boardwalk, and I knew they had an 11 o'clock tournament at the Showboat because, you know, poor Big Guru, he's like, oh, there's an 11 o'clock tournament? We're playing our meetup, and I think he really wanted to play it, but we were playing our stuff instead. And so I remember that, and I'm like, hey, all right, 11 o'clock, I can make it over there for that. So went and signed up for the 11 o'clock tournament, sat down, and I know you've done this. I know a lot of us have done this, but signed in at 11 o'clock, sat down about midnight. What the heck am I doing here? I am tired as hell. And we started with 20,000 in chips. The structure was fairly fast, but, I mean, we had 30 people in it. You know, an hour into it, we hadn't lost a person yet.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Like, what am I doing? Why did I sign up for this? I can't make it all the way to the end of this tournament. And so there was a hand where I opened under the gun with the pocket fours. A guy at the other end of the table on the button, I think, shoved all in on me. And I looked at his stack, and it was big. He had me covered. And I'm like, you know what? My fours are going to hold up, and I'm going to get a big stack, and I'm going to be able to be competitive in this tournament, or I'm going to go home and get some sleep.
Uh-oh, the Cosenza rule. Go big or
yes.
Go home.
Go big or go home. So I called. He had ace-king. My fours held up. I got became the chip leader instantly and took it all the way to the end. But the funny thing is I got down, we were down to four-handed, and that player was still in. And this was 4 hours after that hand happened. And he turns to me, he's like, when you called me with those fours, it's because you wanted to go big or go home, wasn't it? And I'm like, yes, sir, absolutely. And thank you so much for doubling me up, because that was 5 a.m. and I'm still playing cards. And only top three make money here, so you better not knock me out. But we ended up chopping it two ways. And so, you know, I had a pretty profitable trip.
Man. You know what? I can't wait to play against you again, because you have... Believe me, your variance is about to go off a cliff. You are never going to make a big hand again, at least until like 2014. So we got to get a home game going rather quickly. Oh my God.
Yeah, speaking of that, at the final table, I got quads not once but twice.
Oh, geez.
At the final table, one was to knock out this gentleman that I doubled through with the fours. We were on the bubble. We ended up paying the bubble boy his money back. So at that point, I mean, I guess it really wasn't the bubble. But I got all in with him with pocket queens against ace nine or something, and flopped a 10 and turned a 10. knocked him out. Oh, ouch. 2 hands later, I was all in for my life against a woman who had pocket threes, and she had ace something or other, and flopped quads. 3-3-X.
Just so we don't get people writing in, I want to make sure you had pocket tens against the ace nine, right? Not pocket queens, because you said pocket queens.
I'm sorry, pocket tens.
I don't want people writing in and saying, how did you, you know, you had 2 9 of spades on the cover of your magazine, now you're flopping quad tens with 2 queens in your hand, how are you doing that? So, believe me, that letter would come.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, if you're keeping score at home, I had 2 quads in cash game and a strike first in cash game and 2 quads in a tournament, all within probably a 20-30 hour span.
Man, we gotta have a home game. Because you were gonna run so bad in that home game.
And you know, the tournament, we'll finish up talking about this and get to stuff that people really want to hear about, the rooms, but what's funny about the tournament is when we got down to 3-handed, it was me, a guy, and a woman, and the woman got it all in with the other guy, had the worst of it by far, and rivered a card to stay alive, so she should have been out then, right?
Yeah.
2 hands later, I got all in with that guy, the same situation, I had him dominated, and he rivered me. So had the rivers not happened, of course that's ball poker, I'm not saying it shouldn't happen. But had those rivers not happened, I would have won about 30 minutes earlier and won the whole thing.
Wow.
But 2 hands later, I got all in and didn't catch the Miracle River and was short stacked and ended up fighting back to end up taking a huge chip lead heads up. And then he just went all in blind 3 hands in a row and won all of them.
Oh, my God.
We came even and we're like, all right, we're chopping. We're getting the heck out of here. But a lot of fun. Definitely suggest that 11 o'clock tournament if you're on the boardwalk. It's a lot of fun.
So tell me about the rooms. There's a lot to cover here, and we're running kind of late, so make sure you let me know about each room.
But, yeah.
The good stuff. The good stuff.
Well, we mentioned there's some new stuff, and since we've been there, 2 new rooms have opened. Obviously, the one making all the big splash right now is the Rebel. It opened actually the Monday of our meetup, so it's only been open here a couple days. And absolutely gorgeous casino. You know, and that seems funny to say because if you spend a gajillion dollars in a casino, it better look nice.
Yeah, right.
On the first day, you know. But no, I really, you know, there's some casinos that opened recently that everybody raves about, and I walked in, I'm like, yeah, it's nice, but it doesn't really do much for me. You know, it's all personal aesthetics, you know.
Yeah.
You know, one person thinks it's nice, the other person thinks, so. For me, this was amazing. It's very airy and light inside. And the Rebel's all the way on the, I believe, the north side of the boardwalk down by the showboat. And very tall, slender building. And it's all very nice throughout the whole thing. And at the top of the building is this massive golf ball, which apparently changes colors throughout the night.
Huh.
I don't know really what it's up there for. By my personal opinion, it just seems a little cheesy because everything else is so classy and new there. Maybe I'm missing something. I don't know why you want a big golf ball on top, but maybe it gets people talking about it.
Can you go inside it? Is it like a ride in there, like Epcot?
That would be awesome. It's not Vegas, so they hadn't thought about that. But a lot of escalators in this thing. So it's open, and it's really interesting. It's hard to describe. When people go in, they'll see what I mean. But you get in, you get on these escalators, and you go up like literally 3 stories on an escalator to get to the gaming floor.
Wow.
And it's all open. So it kind of reminds me of, you know, the big cruise ships we go on when they have that open atrium that goes all the way. The deck 14, you could look down.
Yeah, yeah.
So really cool. And they have a nice little garden area on the second deck outside with like deck chairs and fire pits and stuff, and a nice little balcony, kind of big, huge balcony that overlooks the boardwalk. So they're doing some really neat stuff there, including it's completely non-smoking. The entire resort. There's nowhere in the resort that you can smoke. They don't even have a smoker section.
Huh.
When light up, you actually have to leave the property either in the front or to the boardwalk. So you know, those of us that don't smoke, it's really nice that, you know, because smoking from more or less is banned everywhere else in Atlantic City now, but they have little areas.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit better than it used to be, but this is certainly a place where you go where you're not going to feel smoke at all. That's what's good for you.
I love that.
But the poker room, I think they did a really good job for. The poker room director, Frank Foti, a great fan of Annie Up, used to run the room at Dover in Delaware, but he's an Atlantic City guy, so he's back home
Yeah, yeah.
Really misses Dover because he's doing some good stuff there, but couldn't pass up this opportunity. And, you know, he describes the room as smoky, which is funny because we just talked about...
Yeah, yeah, there's no smoking allowed, but it's a smoky room.
But the smoky is more of an adjective, not a smell kind of thing. It's a look, you know, kind of like that old-time, I don't want to say old-time gaming. I'm spending the entire trip trying to figure out the right analogy here, because when you say old-time, you kind of think like Wild Wild West kind of, right?
Yeah.
It's not that. It's kind of like, you know, high-end, you know...
Retro?
Yeah, I guess maybe. Yeah. Maybe like a 50s, 60s kind of vibe,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Kind of like a nightclub kind of feeling, which the smoky comes in. So it's pretty dark, and he admits that it's darker than it should be. What happened is really cool. They have hoods over the table, I call them, and that's where the lights are, and also where the surveillance cameras are. So the cameras are in these hoods. So it looks really cool, but he said when they fired everything up, the lights were too bright for the cameras to actually work. So they have to get some new filters and stuff for them. Once they do that, they'll be able to turn the lights up, so it'll be lighting will be better. But I told him, hey, don't turn it up too much, because I like the way it is. You know, sometimes you walk in these rooms, and it's so bright, your retinas are burned.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of nice to go play in a little darker, smokier kind of room, or smoky, quote-unquote, feel kind of room.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's good. I mean, they got, I think, 30 tables in there. They're not doing any tournaments during the soft launch. You know, it opened on Monday, but it's really a soft launch. They're going to do the grand opening, I think, around Memorial Day. So they're just going to see how play goes between then. I imagine they're going to add tournaments after that. They have plenty of convention space to hold big major events, so I would expect something like that. They're really upping the comp ante in Atlantic City. I think what I heard is $1.50 to $2 an hour there.
Mm.
Which is pretty big. You know, some other managers I talked to were grumbling because it means that they're probably going to have to raise their comps as well too. But a very nice place. So definitely worth going back to AC. If you went to AC and you're like, yeah, I don't really like AC, Rebel I think is different than your normal AC. So it's probably worth going back and taking a look.
Cool.
At it. The other new room that's open since we've been there is the Gold Nugget. Used to be the Trump Marina, and. So it's open now. It's a very, very stylish room, which is what you expect the Golden Nugget name. But they're still finishing up construction around the resort, so it's been touch and go and getting a regular crowd in. But the director there, Keith Richmond, a really aggressive guy, really nice. We met him before. He used to work at Caesars there.
Yeah.
And he started some new weekly guaranteed tournament to try to get people in for that. And, of course, you know, Gold Nugget's famous for its Grand Series out in Vegas. So they'll be looking to do something on that line perhaps next spring there. But very nice room, too, as well, too. So two brand new rooms there. Worth going back and checking out for folks that haven't been there before. And, of course, then I went and checked out most of the other rooms, checked and see what's new with them. Harrah's, which is over on that Gold Nugget Borgata off boardwalk area.
Right.
You know, they have that famous that pink chip game I love talking about. You know, the Omaha High Low.
Yeah, the one that made you lose like $400, and that's why
won
this time, because you didn't play in it, right?
Absolutely. Well, it's kind of graduated into a 10-20 game now at the half kill, but it's good to see that they still have the same players. That they just don't use the pink chips anymore. So all that means is I would lose $500 rather than $400. Showboat, of course, which we already talked about. They're doing something really interesting and controversial on weekends now. At 10 p.m. on Fridays and Saturdays, for the most part, they kind of shuffle out their normal dealers and shuffle in what they call the House of Blues Hotties, Chris.
Oh, my God.
These are all super attractive dealers, mostly women, but I think he does have one or two men as part of it. They're all brand new to the game, but he's trained them all. So they are break-in dealers, obviously. They're not... as skilled as experienced dealers. But the idea is to make it a party kind of venue there, because right outside the poker room at the Showboat is the what most casinos have, their party pit, they call it, where they have, you know, the hot dealers there too. And, of course, the House of Blues is right above them. He says it gets really loud. Obviously, it's a big party atmosphere. And, you know, what happened was the serious poker players don't want to put up with that, so they leave and go somewhere else. So... you know, they had to do something to kind of blend in with the overall aura of the resort that night. And this is what he came up with. And, you know, I talked to a couple of players, too, and they all admitted that he's done a really good job of hiring very attractive dealers. So it does attract people in that that like the quote-unquote eye candy, I guess. But certainly they know right away that the dealers aren't as skilled as normal dealers. So, you know, you're going to go in, you're going to expect that the game is not going to be run as well as you normally would. But the flip side is it's attracting people into a room where there probably weren't going to be a lot of games going on. And if you think about it, there are probably going to be players that are a little softer too, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if you could put up with the downsides, there's some big upsides for poker players too. And hey, if you just want to go have some fun, you know, play the House of Blues Hotties, do it on Fridays and Saturdays there. you know, obviously, the Caesars Entertainment properties, there's four of them there. They all work together, as we mentioned before. So Bally still has their 1-1 no limit game going strong. So if you don't want to wager as much money in no limit, you can do that. And, you know, I did a walkthrough in Caesars, and still a very classy room there, too, doing quite well.
Does it still have the big tables that rival, like, the Masters greens?
Yeah, I knew you were going to ask me that, and I forgot to check.
Those tables were so big. You need a GPS just to find your way to the other end of the table.
Or what if you had two House of Blue Hotties playing at that table?
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Shorten it up. Of course, you know, you got to go over to the Borgata, and they're getting ready to the day after I left to start their spring series. You know, the place is just cranking out tournaments left and right.
Yeah.
You know, so it does a great job. They've got such a great reputation for doing it. Had a great meeting there as well too. And then before I left, you know, our good friend Lee Childs was driving in for the day. He was playing for a week. Another Antiochum was Mike Wolf. And stopped and had some beers with them, and it was great. And had a long talk with Lee, too. I mean, I just, you know, I love gushing on this guy. He's just so cool. And, you know, we were just talking about poker and some other stuff. You know, he's just a great ambassador for the game. He's getting ready to go down to a charity event in Atlanta, I believe it is. Somewhere in Georgia, and driving down there. You know, that's what I like to see with pros, you know, being very giving with their time, not just playing. But, you know, that's quite a bit of haul in the car.
Yes.
From his home in outside the D.C. area. So, and they're, you know, of course, they're getting ready to do their Inside the Mines this week too. Their training program at the Borgata, which is becoming pretty popular up there too. So, if folks are in that area, go down and learn from Lee. And of course, you know, come on our cruises too and learn from him. Real quickly, the Taj Mahal where we stayed. You know, this is funny. I don't think we really talked about this when you and I went. I mean, I know we obviously talked about the Rounders memorabilia on the wall there. But, you know, staying at the Taj this time, every day I was writing down what I called the worm elevator or masculator. you know, the one at that series where I guess Mike is on it too, and they're slowly coming down that big escalator. It's kind of cool, actually, to come down and you get down the bottom and right there the poker room is.
Yeah.
But I always think about the movie when I'm coming down
there. Me too.
Room was rocking. They had a good play. I think all the rooms were actually doing quite well this week. I think the Revel brought in a lot of people, and there's a lot more foot traffic, so they're doing well. And they had a little 1-5 stud game going, which I'm sure would have made you happy. It wasn't stud 8, I don't think, but you might have been able to talk them into that.
Yes, 1-5, spread stud.
Really, it was the only stud game outside of our hose game that I saw on the boardwalk. You know, you pretty much had to go over to the Borgata. To get a stud game other than the Taj, so
I'm sure the Borgata game was like 30-60 or 120-240 or something.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. Yeah. So you had to park your airplane. I didn't make it. Again, sadly, I didn't make it down to Tropicana this time. But I heard a lot of good things from folks that it's doing strong business still. So as it should down on that end. I mean, it doesn't really have any competition down on the south end of the boardwalk. But I look forward to going back there next time. But after Atlantic City, I drove up to the Philadelphia market. You know, when we were out there last time, Parks had opened their casino, but hadn't finished the poker room yet. Actually opened in November, I believe.
Right.
So my first time seeing it, people were raving about it, and it was very nice when you walk in. Very nice. The best part of it is a self-contained room, too. You know, you got like the casino downstairs, and then you get a casino in the other building as well, too. But when you're in the poker room, you're in the poker room.
Yeah.
There's really nothing else there, although in the back they have some of those Shuffle Master video blackjack machines, you know, with the little animatronic dealers.
Yep.
So you could play some blackjack if you wanted to. But it's a self-contained room. They got a big bar in the back where you can get food service. They got a little smoking area way in the back with some of those smoking hood things, you know, to suck the smoke out. But the big thing, I think, they get some majorly big games there. And, you know, I was checking my little Bravo Poker Live the entire time after I downloaded it, and it was almost consistent. They had, like, a 150-300 game going. They had a 300-600. And some of them were studs, some were Omaha, some were Hold'em. Those are big games. Those are games I don't see anywhere outside of the biggest rooms in Vegas. Or California, too, I guess.
But. And that's what I think when they first launched, that's what they were striving for, was they wanted to be the big game on, you know, big games or whatever on the East Coast, and it looks like they're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And those games all have time charges. I think they said $7 a half hour. They also do a time charge on the 612 Omaha game, which I think is a little odd. It's a little less, though, I think. But they put all those, they section off the room. I like rooms that do this, where they section it off, so they put, you know, all the 1, 2 no-limit players in the same little area.
Right.
Lower limit players in another area, and then they have their, you know, their big games in a different area, different, a little bit more private. Ooh, excuse me. Just getting so choked up talking about it. But they're bigger games in the high-limit area. You know, some rooms obviously have the high-limit area, but they actually were very conscientious about splitting up the lower limit games, too, if you're all in the same area. And one of the things I really liked, it might have been a little cheesy, but from a practical standpoint, I wish every room would do this. They have massive table numbers hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
So when you walk in and someone says, hey, you're, and they have 60-some tables in this room, so they have a lot, obviously. You know, so when the brush says, all right, take your seat at table 36, I mean, you invariably, most rooms have to say, all right, where's 36?
Yeah.
And they'll kind of give you a general motion of their arm. And you spend another half an hour walking around. Hey, is this 36? No, it's over there. Oh, this, no, am I at 36? Yes, you're here. Oh, thank gosh. And here, I mean, you can look up in the sky, and unless you have a couple thicknesses of glasses on, you'll be able to go right to your table and sit down. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. They do that in the World Series. They put the numbers over the tables because it's so massive. So if your room's that big and people aren't familiar with it, it just certainly helps.
Certainly a lot of action going on there. They got a WPT Regionals kicking off later this month. You know, they really are the place to play tournaments now. I think they're between them and Borgata. And obviously I think they're timing their schedules right, because the Borgata event is going to end right before the Parks one starts. So
right.
Big time tournament player in the market. We had been to Harris Chester before over by the airport, and I went back because I got a new manager, Bruce Dixon. He used to run the Mohegan Sun Room up in Connecticut,
and
he's taken over. And I'm real excited about this because, as he mentioned, he's the first real true poker manager that room has had since they opened. You know, it's been one of those rooms that like so many these days, are being run out of the casino pit. And sometimes that's all right because you'll find you know, a table games manager that actually likes poker and can kind of act as a poker room manager, but more often than not, it doesn't quite work as well as having a dedicated manager. So the room's finally going to get some direction there. He's got some big changes, he says, coming. They got an April tournament series coming up, so he's focusing on that. But he said, well, once May comes around, he's going to really work on doing some stuff at the room that hasn't been done before. So we'll be real interested to see the changes once he gets a move in there.
Cool.
And then, you know, the other thing, traffic-wise, too, after that I drove to Delaware Park, which is only half an hour away from Chester, which is only half an hour away from Parks, and Parks is only about an hour away from Atlantic City, and, of course, if you go north, you've got the Sands Bethlehem. So, I mean, there's more than a dozen rooms within an hour drive, depending on where you live in this area.
Yeah, very similar to, like, South Florida or, you know, whatever.
Right, so. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you certainly could make a trip of it and stay either in Philadelphia, probably Philadelphia if you want to hit a bunch of rooms, or Atlantic City, and you have a lot of good options. So.
Yeah.
But I did go to the Delaware Park, and you were with me last time there, and I think we loved how that room was designed. You know, it has kind of that like early 20th century kind of feel to it.
Yeah, it had the brass everywhere.
Right.
And, yeah, wood. And yeah, it was really, really sharp.
And last time we were there, they were putting the final touches on a new tournament room way back in the back of the facility.
Yeah.
Hadn't opened yet. But that's obviously opened. In fact, the whole room has moved back there now.
And that's like the smartest thing they could ever have done.
Yeah.
I mean, really. I mean, the first thing we brought up was, aren't you guys concerned that you're 25 yards away from the cash game action and there's actually exits in between the tournament room and the cash game room, so you might lose that business when they get knocked out of a tournament? And they're like, you know, and so it's like the smartest thing they could have done was move that stuff all into that one room.
Yeah, and much like the parks now, it's a kind of in this quiet, self-contained area, so you don't have the slot machines dinging and stuff. So it's a poker room in a casino, which is kind of cool. The director there, Kevin Castoro, was telling me that the players really responded well, too. They obviously still have the initial room. It's still there, but they use that for their tournaments now, tournament overflow. Still being used, but for the most part, all the action's back in the back now. They just finished up the Delaware Park Classic there, said it was a smash. In fact, actually, Lee Childs was telling me he played that in the main event and really liked the structures, too, so they did a good job. Kevin was telling me the only complaints he heard were over his scheduling, but again, this is one of those business of poker kind of things. He's got 48 tables in his room. They looked at adding 7, but they couldn't figure out how to do it quickly enough. So when you have 48 tables, you want to be sure. I mean, your plan is to get 480 people in that room every day.
Yeah.
Not 481, not 300.
Yeah.
So you know, they took the tournaments that they thought were going to be the biggest draws and put those on weekdays, so they can artificially limit the number of people. And if they took those big tournaments and put them on the weekend, they would have had, you know, 1,000 people show up, and it would have been chaos, and people would have got upset. So I think it's very smart how they did it. I mean, obviously, if they get more capacity, they can certainly get more people in there. But and they're looking to do another series, he said, I think in the fall as well, too. So they're still crunching the numbers on how well the Classic did and figure out what how to make it work. But just a lot of great poker in this area. I mean, I really like going up there and seeing it. And like I said, it's all very – it's not like a Vegas where you can walk to 100 rooms. No. But you can get in your car and you can get to a lot of different places pretty quickly there. So.
Very cool.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Ante Up.
This week comes in a long time listener, Chris Dave Morningweg.
Yep.
We always joke about the. We can't joke now about Marty Morningweg. He's not even coaching anymore, right?
I don't think he is.
I think that's how long it's been since Dave has written in. But he's not sure whether it's hand of the week worthy, but he thinks it might be situation of the week worthy. We'll see what our listeners say. We're not going to pigeonhole him here.
But, all right.
He was playing at Mohegan Sun, which I imagine was a Connecticut one, he didn't say, but they had one in Pennsylvania as well, too. And he says he just can't get this hand out of his head, Chris.
Okay.
It's $1, $2 no-limit hand. He says it's worth noting that this hand takes place about 2.5 hours into a session where I had a quote-unquote hard stop at 3 hours. So it's near the end of my time at the table. So, you know, apparently he's going to turn into a pumpkin at 3 hours. And we're 2.5 in, so we have a half an hour left to chip up, right?
Yep.
And it may also be worth noting that I only get to play live a couple times a year. I think this is important, too. I mean, this is always the problem I have, you know, before we started magazine, I travel as much. But before, you know, when Fast and I used to do our trips, you know, we tried to pack as much poker as we could in there because we knew we were going to get to play that again.
Right.
And you end up making bad mistakes because you're trying to get as much play in. So I imagine that's what he's alluding to. We'll find out. He says, the table has been rather limp-happy throughout the session. I'm in seat one with $190. Seat two is relatively new and has been inactive for the lap or two he's been on board. Seat three is flops and has been very active post-flop. His stack has varied from less than $100 to over $300. He's been on a bit of a heater as of late and is now back up over $200. Both seat two and seat three have our hero here covered, but not by much. And our hero's image is certainly tight aggressive, though I've limped into a few pots. The ones I've entered with the raise have all ended up in my favor.
Okay.
There's a limper in front, and I'm in middle position with eight of diamonds.
Wait, you dropped out. Eight of diamonds and what? Six of diamonds?
Six of diamonds.
Okay.
One limper in front of him. We're in middle position with eight of diamonds, six of diamonds. What do we do?
Oh, jeez. You know, I don't really like to play these one gappers or connectors unless I'm really in position. And the other thing too is, I mean, I'll limp along if a lot of people limped along, But if it's just one person in the pot right now and I got a bunch of people behind me to act, if I'm going to play them, I might want to try to raise with them just because I might want to maybe even get position somehow by getting the guys behind me to fold and blinds to stick around or whatever. So I don't know. Generally, I probably would fold if I'm in that early of a position. I know he mentioned it was a limp fest, so he might want to consider limping because he thinks that he can. But then again, you know, you're going to have limpers behind you, and then you're going to be acting ahead of them the rest of the way. And I just like to be able to close the action when I have connectors, if for nothing else, to try to get a free card on the turn with a raise later or something. So I don't know. I generally would fold it. Since he's going to play it, I would probably play it for a raise just because, like I said, I want to disguise the hand, and I'd like to try to get position if I can on some players. So that's what I would do. I'm sure he doesn't.
Yep, that's the end of the hand, so moving on. No, this is one of those rare hands where I think I can justify all three possible actions.
Yep.
Obviously, it's not a great hand, so folding is certainly never a problem with this hand. He did say it's a limp-happy table, so we can have some reasonable expectation that if we limp in, we'll actually see the flop fairly cheaply. And if we flop big, then we can score with it. And I'm with you. I kind of like to raise with hands like this. You know, mixes up how I play a little bit. And, you know, I can represent a lot of different hands. If I actually hit those hands, then all the better. In fact, I actually had one in that tournament in Atlantic City where I had 3-6 of hearts. And I raised pre-flop. The first one in, raised pre-flop. Hit a 6 on my on the flop. Bet out. Told myself at that point, all right, I'm done now unless I improve. You know, the 6 on the turn. checked around, and then I put in a value bet on the river, got everybody to call. Loved it! So, that you know, that's kind of the stuff you can do if you raise here. So I'm going to go ahead and raise as well, too. And, you know, we got a decent stack here, right? So we can get frisky here. We got a half an hour left. You know, we'll put in a raise here and, you know, see what we can do on the flop, but also know that we're not going to get ourselves in too much trouble. So,
yeah.
I think really the big thing is knowing what your plan is based on what you're doing and sticking to that as you go through. You know, if you're going to raise here and represent, then
that's a good point.
Stick with it. If you're going to limp, hoping to hit it big or get out, then hit it big or get out. All right. Well, here decides a limp. C2 does it as well too. C3 pops it to $10, Chris.
Yeah.
Folds around to us, and what do we do now?
Well, that's the problem. Now, you've only lost $2, but you're out of position against a preflop aggressive raiser, and I think, didn't he say this person was on a heater now, but was pretty aggressive? Is that what he said?
Let's see. Yes, C3 has been on a heater. Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could easily see myself letting it go now. I'm out of position. I only put in $2. Now you're asking me to put in 8 more. You know, I'm getting 2-1 on my money, but with suited connectors, I'm not even connected, really, and out of position. So, I don't know. Again, I hate to be the buzzkill or whatever, but I would probably fold.
Buzzkill!
You know, I'm not going to raise again. I mean, that's going to look ridiculous if you raise now. So, obviously, we're just going to call, because he's going to do that, so we might as well just call. But I wouldn't be hard-pressed to, you know, if somebody said, is it a mistake to fold here? I wouldn't argue. You know, I would say no. A fold isn't a bad idea, but whatever. I mean, we only invested $2, so
well,
I knew
this
was going to happen, though.
I think what's important here is what we talked about before: is sticking to your story,
yeah,
or your plan of attack here. So if you're going to limp here, it's because you're going to limp cheaply and hit it big. We limped; it got raised.
Yeah.
So we fold now.
I mean, it's the same really basic instruction that people give you where they say, if your hand's good enough to call a raise, then why didn't you raise with it the first time?
And,
you know what I mean?
So, and I think that's what's most interesting here. Think about what if we had raised.
Right.
What that would mean to C3. Now, obviously, we don't have the cards yet, so we can go back and talk about that later. But if C3 really has a strong hand, he would have raised us. And then we would have known, hey, we were messing around. This guy really has something. We could probably fold. And if he didn't have a good hand, maybe he's just raising because everybody else is limping.
Yeah.
You know, but if we'd raised, then maybe he would have just called this $10, and we're going to see the flop in the driver's seat rather than the passenger seat like we are now if he decided to call.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, our hero does make the call, so does seat two. Pot is $35, And the flop is the nine of diamonds, four of tray of diamonds.
All right, so two diamonds, no pairs.
Oh, three diamonds. Nine of diamonds, four of diamonds.
Oh, four. Okay, you cut out again there. Okay, so we flopped a flush.
Flopped a flush.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to check to this guy now. I know it's going to sound terrible because he could have any high diamond and check behind, but he was the aggressor, so I'm hoping that he bets, and then I could maybe make another bigger bet and make him really pay to hit his king of diamonds or ace of diamonds or whatever he has in his hand if he does have a high diamond. So I think I'll check here and see what he does.
All right. Our hero says that he doesn't think it's at all likely that this flop hit anyone else as hard as it's hit us. Obviously, the odds are in that favor. It says, our plan is to check raise because I'm expecting a big bet from one of the villains. Sure enough, seat 2 fires $10 into the pot. But what rattles us, Chris, is when seat 3 raises to $31. I did not expect this at all, and it flat out startled me. He's startled, Chris. Startled and rattled.
Well, the question is, can you run it twice in this building, and are you playing against Gambit? That's the question we have to ask. If those are yeses, then I'm shoving. No, I'm not shoving, but I'm making it 100 or something, or 70 or 80 or something. I think that it's pretty clear that the first bet, not clear, it seems to me, because it could be anything, but to me it seems like that first bet was I'm going to test the waters here because I don't think anybody really has diamonds.
Flush. Right, yeah.
And then the other guy's raising because he probably got, like, you know, he doesn't think he got the flush, so he may have a decent diamond in his hand and a good pair. You know, he might have, like, jacks or something with a jack of diamonds in his hand or something like that. So,
possible. Yeah.
You know, making a raise there is not that big of a risk to this guy because he has the redraw. So we already have the hand and it's extremely vulnerable.
Right.
And we are not... I don't think we're behind. I don't think there's a possibility that we're behind. One, if the other guy flopped a bigger flush, he wouldn't have bet $10. And if the guy who raised flopped a bigger flush, why would he raise when he's got two other guys on the hook with a big flush in his hand? So he might call along. So I feel like we're ahead, and we really need to put the hammer down.
Put the hammer down.
Make it like $80.
All right, I like that. This is what our hero was thinking. He thought for the better part of a minute. Go ahead and think for 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, why not?
It's not the hotline you're calling here.
Yeah, you don't have to think for a minute until they put you on the clock.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that, at the tournament, I had the guy, when I eliminated him with my 10s, he took forever. And then at some point, he's like, you know, hey, I'm really sorry, man. You can call the clock on me if you want. How nice is that? And I'm like, dude, no, take your time. I don't care. I'm not one of those jerks.
Call the clock on yourself.
That was nice. You know, hey, I know I'm taking a long time. If you need to call the clock, go ahead. You have my permission.
Gee, thanks.
All right, so here's what our hero was thinking. He says, one, it's very possible someone behind me has a higher flush draw or a higher made flush. It's possible there's a set in play. The other likelihood is overcards. I think this is a classic way ahead, way behind situation. Probably true, but I think you made a good point that it doesn't make sense right now for a higher flush to be out there based on the action. But two, with two villains, the odds of having to fade a higher flush draw or boat redraw are greater. Yes, absolutely. Three, I have the sixth nut flush. though we have do we have a possibility of runner straight flush here? I think we do, right?
Yeah, somehow it's possible. It's definitely possible.
Yeah. Number four, to get any credible information, I have to put about 40% of my remaining chips in play, raise to 75 plus or more. Calling does not seem like a good option with another player yet to act. That's correct. Number five, this may have been the first hand seat two has played since he sat down. I have no credible information on how he's going to respond to that seat three raise. And number six, whether or not this is a smart decision, I am conscious that I have about half an hour left. So far in the session, I've played well and grinded a starting stack of 160 up to 230. After having initially fallen to 120, I had recently lost a smallish pot to whittle down at just below $200. Point being, it's on my mind that the session is coming to an end, and I don't want to end on a sour note.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I
see, number six is what's going to get our forum rankled because they don't think you should. I shouldn't say think that. They do think that, but they think people like me and our hero here overthink that part of it.
Yeah, but. I'm there to win money, man. And if I think that I have a 75-25 edge on some guy with only a set, you know what I mean, or something, I'm testing that edge and I'm putting some money in here. I'm not letting him hit for his price. And I went there to play cards, and I went there to win money. I didn't go there to leave with $20 more. You know what I mean? I just, if I don't get to play that often, you know, I'm going to want to get my money's worth when I flop a flush. I mean, why'd you play the hand? To make sixes and eights? You know, or whatever? No, you want this flush. The whole point of it is that you wanted this flush, and again, the way the betting patterns went, I just don't put them on a flush. If it's a flush draw, you've already got the flush, and you have two of their outs in your hand. I just feel like you need to really, you know, man up and bet it.
No, okay, so here's my question now, I guess. I think you've convinced me that we have the best hand here. Uh-huh. Not that I'm convincing, but you have. And you're talking about raising to 80 or so. Is that a big enough bet to discourage, you know, like you said, a pocket jacks with a jack of diamond?
Well,
and if we're going to put that bet in, are we going to get all of our stack in eventually or not?
Well, I think that we will probably get all of our stack in if this guy comes over the top one more time. If he just calls and a blank falls on the turn, then we're going to get it in. If another diamond comes, then I don't know what happens. Then I have to really figure this guy out. But, you know, the other thing is, yeah, this guy might have jacks with a jack of diamonds or something, but we could easily have, you know, ace of diamonds something. You know, ace, what was the top card, 10? He could have ace 10 with ace of diamonds, nine. You know, or whatever, nine. So that his redraw is only, isn't good. You know, he has to survive on his jacks, so... I don't know. I mean, I certainly am not going to just call along.
No.
If we were heads up, and I, you know, even then, I just feel like I'm out of position. I need to put an end to this hand or get as much money in as I can while I can as the favorite. So, I don't know if that's enough money. 10, then the guy raced at 30, so maybe make it 90 or 100.
Well, again, I mean, we're betting for value here, so we're not necessarily trying to drive people out. We want to.
Well, I do want to make it heads up if I can. That's for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess that's what I'm getting at. We're in a situation where we don't want two people drawing against us, so we want to lose one and get as much money out of the second one as possible. I think that's the way we should be looking at it, right?
Yeah, no, I think so. But I think 80 would be enough to get the $10 guy out if he doesn't have a monster. And then it might be enough to get the other guy out and you take a nice little profit, or to get him to call along and then really put the hammer down on the turn if it blank falls.
Yeah, blank falls. Yep.
That's how it feels. I mean, I don't know. What does he do?
All right, our hero folds begrudgingly.
Oh, no. Oh, man. Oh, then here's the deal. Don't play those cards.
Yeah.
I mean, ever.
I think you're right. That's the point.
You know?
Or a half an hour left. I mean, this is kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, this should have gone through the thought process, and I'm sure it probably did. I mean, you're probably going to talk about this later on in this letter. But, you know, if number six on his criteria was in his mind, it should have been in his mind pre-flop, and he should have said, hey, I've got half an hour left. I don't want to end on a sour note. I'm not going to speculate.
Right.
Because when you speculate with eight of diamonds, six of diamonds, the best you can hope for is flopping the nut straight.
Yeah.
Right?
A rainbow nut straight.
Yeah, if you hit a flush like we did here, which you normally would like to do, but you're worried about the betting and getting out of it, then you've totally killed the value of playing that hand.
Exactly.
So you should have just folded.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't improve upon that. You either don't play the hand or max value it when you hit what you want to hit with it. So.
All right. So the hand continues, though. He says C2 does make the call. The turn is a non-diamond. C2 bets out, C3 raises, and again C2 calls.
Huh.
Our hero says, I'm starting to feel better about my decision. The river's another blank, and I check it down. C2 has jack-jack, C3 has ace-ace, and neither one of them has a diamond in their hand.
Holy cow! And one of them was jack-jack, too. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Oh my god, neither one of them had a diamond, and they're betting and raising. Yeah, see, you need to get your money in there, man. You need to get your money in there. I mean,
this is a wake-up call for the last 28 minutes, whatever's left in your session.
Yeah.
If people are going to play these hands that strongly on a dangerous board like that, there's a profit potential here for you.
And the other thing, too, is that the C2 didn't raise with those jacks pre-flop, right? Didn't it go, they limped, or whatever, and then the guy raised? Was it C3 that raised?
Yeah, C3 raised to 10, and C2 just made the call.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, I would do that with jacks.
You'd limp with jacks with two limpers before you?
No, no, he called the raise. Let's see.
Well, it's two. Oh, it's two and three.
No, you're right. Right. You're right. Yeah, he did limp.
So
yeah.
He limped with him. That's weird.
Well, you know, again, it all depends what your plan is. If your plan is to limp and hope you hit a jack or get three undercards and then become active, and if, you know, an ace, king, or queen comes, fold, I can defend that because then you're only putting $2 in with it. I know, generally speaking, people are going to raise with jacks and play them strong, but if that's your plan,
yeah.
If your plan is to limp and then play strong with an ace, king, or queen, then that's ridiculous. You should raise.
All right, well, the moral of the story
is... down, it was that way.
Play those cards
Our hero's postmortem says, I'm pissed from a results standpoint, but ignoring the results, was this a reasonable play in this situation? Were the pre-flop moves a limp call defensible, given that it forced myself to play out of position for the rest of the hand? What is the best play to make on the flop? Should I have led? Should I have folded? Raised? Is there a case to be made for calling? The session wrapped up shortly after, but I cannot stop thinking about this one hand.
Yeah. I mean, he literally had these guys drawing dead. I mean, it would have had to have gone runner-runner to... for a boat.
You
know, and that's just not going to happen, and obviously it didn't happen. So when you flop a flush, there's a good chance that... I mean, there was that one time I was in that... Remember that? I don't know if you remember this or not.
One time at band camp?
At Tampa Bay Downs. I played in that charity tournament and went back for day two, because I actually survived till day two and cashed. And on the final hand for me, I had like 9-10 of clubs and shoved because I was short stacked. Got called in two places, and it was like... ace, jack of clubs, king, queen of clubs, and I was 9-10 of clubs, and we all flopped the flush. So, I mean, yeah, that was once in my entire lifetime that there were two players in the hand with me, and someone else flopped a flush when I did, and in this case, it was two people. So, you really got to bet that hand for value there.
Yeah.
And I was out of the tournament.
All right, Dave, we appreciate you sending the hand of the week. Hopefully, a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for the Apple products from Smapsoft will make you forget this hand. And everybody else out there, you don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And remember to send your hands of the week to podcast at andyupmagazine.com.
Don't forget, call a hotline. Put your Phil on. Do your best Phil Hellmuth impression. And we'll send the best one a nice piece of swag. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.